Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks for the invite to talk about the exciting topic of cost control. But good to have a sunny day and good to see the GDT lift this morning. So everyone should have a spring in their step, and thanks for making the effort to come out, guys. So certainly not up here to preach at all or suggest there's a better way to do stuff. Purely just going to talk about what Dairy Holdings does and might be an insight into that for you all. I know in a previous life of mine as a rural banker for 10 years, a couple of years of debt recovery, even when farms are at the point of mortgagee sale, farmers are unwilling to change their farm system or cost structure. So I know that there's no point in me suggesting a different path. So today is just about an insight into Dairy Holdings. So Dairy Holdings is probably a little bit like China to most of you. You'll have heard a few statistics about it. There'll be a small element of truth to it, but most of the statistics probably wrong. So I'll just run through a few things to give you the base facts of I guess our business. So 62 dairy farms. We went to 57,000 cows. Predominantly Fonterra supply, about 6,000 hectares of dairy support with 14,000 head of each class of young stock and full supply of our own bulls as well. So I guess fully self-contained business, and you know, it's taken us a long time to get to that point, but I guess that if you think about it from a strategic point of view around cost control, has been something at Dairy Holdings, the path we've been on for probably a decade to get us to that point. And as has been mentioned before, the costs that have risen the most in the last few years is purchase feed and grazing. And so for those, we just don't expose ourselves to those costs in our business. So just to give you a bit of insight around break-even milk price. So at the start of the season, we were forecasting break-even milk price at $6.20 for us, made up of $4.30 and $1.90 of interest / lease. So we've got Fonterra dividend in our break-even milk price. So with the increase in dividend and some adjustments around costs, we're probably now sitting around the 585 mark for this coming year. So just, I didn't have a lot of time to prepare my slides for Jeremy, so just cut a few things out of the newspaper there on the first slide there. So I guess just, a couple of Fonterra milk price cuts at the start of the season, and I think the key thing there is good for them to send the signal nice and early for us to all know early or make adjustments. It's something that we probably don't worry about too much. The milk price, we can't control it. It's hard to react. You know, if you think back to those years prior to the last five or six around the volatility going up and down, it's really hard to react. We can't predict it. We're just not that good enough. So based on that, we stay away from fixed milk price. We're in the dairy game for a long period of time. We're not good enough to pick it. And we know over a long period of time, every time we take a position, someone's taking a margin on that position. So we take the view that we have to be able to ride the good with the bad over a long period of time, and we're prepared to do that. So all the noise around milk price, we largely ignore it or try not to second guess it. We just take it at face value. So good to see GDT up again this morning, but you know, just some stuff around China there that's still a little concerning, particularly around, I think I read the other day, they had 11 million university graduates coming out of university. 70% of them couldn't get a job. And I think the unemployment rates for people around early 20s is pretty high there. So I know that the government, their government's trying hard to stimulate the economy, and hopefully that works. Just a few things around there, and it's already been touched on for Fonterra suppliers this year. Capital distribution back to shareholders, and also that really strong dividend has probably softened what's coming, or or the carryover or deferred income from last year plus those couple of dollops of cash has kind of softened where we're at, or that combined with the higher advance rate, or I guess the bit that we're really conscious of and really aware of what that means for the end of the season and for next winter. So we're getting a lot of cash up front, more cash up front now than, that extra 10% the advance rate. We just all need to remember that we've got that now. It won't be there at the end, and we're likely to have slightly less deferred. So the bit on, fertiliser there. It's just around, just some concerning trends. Everyone I talk to is probably carrying on with their fertiliser applications, but something, a non-negotiable for us around what we look at and what we don't look at. So in terms of maintenance fertiliser, things would have to get really, really, really bad for us to even consider that. So it's not something that's on the table. I've already touched on it. The two key things in terms of strategy for us, probably being around the self-contained piece and the purchase feed. And whilst people looking into Dairy Holdings might wonder why, we and particularly around the purchase feed, don't look to feed more. And it's pretty simple, again, is that across our scale, across 62 dairy farms, the amount of decision-making that's required to get that right, when to start, how much to feed, when to stop, would just be really tough, and we wouldn't be able to get it right. There's some pretty good research around in terms of the variable cost on that dollar you spend on feed is for us at our scale of business over a long period of time is just an area that we won't consider going into. So a really basic, simple farm system for us. We feed about 30 to 50 kilos of dry matter per cow per lactation on average. So in that, we've got some farms that don't feed anything, and then we've got a few farms that might be will be higher than that, where for what we might have irrigation breakdown or we've got it wrong slightly. So, but a real simple system. We get our stocking rate right, we get our reproduction right, and then we try and do the basics really well, spring rotation planner, and then round length, and then autumn management. And I think for us, if we can get that bit right, that's the biggest driver for managing our costs. Or look at it the other way is we'll get half the equation right, and if we can manage the costs right, then we've got the whole thing right. But it's the farm system for us that's, the key to the business of being able to hold cost or maintain cost. We're never having to look at, should we contract feed? Should we not? Should we be feeding it? Should we not? So we have that silage available, so our guys are able to, we don't have it on farm, but we have it available so our guys are able to put it in when and if they need it. But it's a real conscious decision to put that in and probably feed the wedge instead of the cow just to get us back into the position that we need to be in. So just on the reproduction side of things, I think in the last 5 years we've gone from 67% six-weaning calf rate to 76% across the whole herd, across the 60-odd farms. So been a real focus around the fertility of our bulls. We have a real simple mating policy, though, where we use 1.2 straws per cow, no intervention, and then we finish off with bulls and a 10-week mating period, and that policy's been in place now for a long time. So that holds us in good stead. It gives us options into the future around who knows where emissions go or bobbies or whatever, but we know that foundation will hold us in good stead or give us optionality into the future about what we do. And for this year, you get a good year like this around the climate, the ability to take advantage of that. So for us, we're 300,000 milk solids up year on year, And if anything, we have probably fed less silage into farms or needed to do that. So, you know, that's essentially, I that income's free, I guess, over and above last year as a comparison. So, but you can't do that unless you have you set your farm up well and you have the cows calve at the speed that you want, so to take advantage of it. So, yeah, just continue focus in that area. Non-negotiables there. I'm sure it's the same for every farmer sitting in the audience, just around health and safety. So for the stuff we're deferring around CapEx or R&M, it certainly won't include anything around health and safety for the season, animal welfare, environment and people. So I guess the industry, it's good. It's getting to the point now where I think 99% of farmers are really proactive in this space and trying to do the right thing. So we're no different to everyone else. Just a straight copy and paste there about the things that we thought, you know, as soon as the milk price dropped, what we'd do. I'm certainly not going to run through them, but I guess the bit that when you look at it on the business of our scale, we weren't able to do a lot. We actually can't, because the farm system's so basic, so simple, there's not a lot of levers we can pull. And with those few we've done there, I think it added up to about 10 cents per kilo of milk solid. So it's not the difference between you surviving or not. I think the key thing for us in this and is probably around the messaging to our farm teams and getting the culture or the mindset of reacting to the low or lower milk price. So it's business as usual, but just even tweaking a little, one or two things just sends the message that, you know, we just need to be careful with what we're spending. But you'll see in there there's nothing drastic. We're not doing anything that's going to compromise the farm system for next season or set us up to fail in the future. So it's largely business as usual with a few tweaks. And then just to finish off a couple of phrases that I quite like to use from time to time is that when the salesman comes up your driveway, that the paper will always accept the ink. So whatever they are trying to sell you in terms of a return basis, I guess that's where we're really careful around that we want that return. We actually want to see some evidence of the return or be able to say we will get that return, and any bit over and above it or a bit that hasn't been proven, we get, you know, as upside. So I think farmers, particularly in high milk price times, are probably convinced of doing stuff over and above what they'd normally do because, you know, on paper it looks like it'll make a return, but it seldom does. And then I guess the other one, just at the moment where we can, if we're able to defer stuff, we are. And I guess, you know, we'll let the knife hit the floor. So I think there's plenty of suppliers and service people probably getting beaten up by others at the moment. We're just, where we can, stepping back and deferring and letting time take care of the price reduction or the reset that's happening at the moment. So we want to be, I guess, in business with people in the long term, and so we're not trying to beat people up at the moment on stuff. We're doing the essential stuff at the moment, and then the other stuff we're just deferring it for later than year, or if we can defer it to the following season. So that's probably a quick insight, Jeremy. Happy to take any questions.
So I'll kick it off there, Blair. A good chunk of your management team on farms are contract milkers, share milkers. They're in the same business too in terms of making milk, you know, for the viability of their business. So how do those conversations go? You touched on it a wee bit.
So 40-odd contract milkers and about a dozen share milkers. So contract milkers not exposed to milk price. So largely business as usual, Jeremy, for them. And nothing we've done that'll compromise their ability to achieve production. Same with the share milkers. around the production. Obviously, they're exposed to milk price, so we're just our supervisor team. Many of them have been through share milking themselves, had the highs, or probably had more highs and lows than the current lot of share milkers ahead. So we're certainly getting alongside our guys and just checking in. Fortunately, we haven't got any share milkers where this is their first year, so we're just checking and making sure their cash flows are right, that they're doing what they say they're going to do around their banks. But in terms of, we got everyone on a Teams call pretty much the day after the milk price announcement, just got the management team, supervisors, all the farm operators, and I just had a good chat about a way forward.
Great. Questions?
Just with the environment, Steve, do you have any idea what the
DHL
system, your average greenhouse gas emission is per kg of solids?
Yeah. So the question was just, what's your greenhouse gas emissions per kilo of milk solids?
Yeah, so we sit at pretty much the average for New Zealand dairy farmer. And I guess it's a bloody good question, and we've had plenty of discussions with Fonterra around this. And I guess we're just as a, well, there needs to be, I know Fonterra's getting a lot of pressure around an intensity measure, I guess, you know, emissions per kilogram of milk solid, and I guess our response to that is the easiest way for us to improve our intensity measure is actually to ramp up our purchase feed to bring that down. But obviously, you've got some tension between what the government's put in place around regulation of, which is a total emission measure, you know, by 2030, 10% reduction in methane. And then, but you've got some of our customers, as I understand it, the likes of Nestle, that have got an intensity measure that they want Fonterra to reduce. So we're middle of the pack. In terms of our efficiency, the bit where we've had the win, so we obviously can't pull any feed out. The bit we've had the win is coming from probably 7-8 years ago, 270 kilos of N, all the way down. We were 200 the year before, the 190 came in, and last year we averaged 158 kilos of N across the whole dairy platform. So.
Sorry, the actual
figure, Glenn? What, around 11? I think we're probably in that range. We plus or minus, I mean, there's those graphs that we sit slap bang in the middle.
For New Zealand or for Canterbury?
Both. Yeah.
Any other questions? Yeah, Sean. So, question really around what are DHL doing to grow more grass and convert it?
I guess part of that observation was right, is that there's been a long development process around converting to spray irrigation, which still continues today. I think we've got 9 or 10 pivots going this year, so largely infill pivots now. So I guess that... probably combined with a regrassing program, so that those areas that were poorly irrigated, the persistence hasn't been good. So better irrigation, the regrassing, and then just continued focus around grazing management. Really, so no rocket science in there, or no silver bullet. But I mean, it's something we really focus on and benchmark ourselves against every year.
That's great. Oh, thank you, Blair. Oh, sorry, one last question.
Just around your regrassing, because you touched on it then. I see in your mitigation factors about halving regrassing plan. Yep. Well, in a normal year, would you expect to have your regrassing percentage be?
So, question's just, we're half the regrassing this year, but what does normal look like?
Yeah, so for Canterbury and the Waitaki, which is the large percentage of our dairy platforms, that's been 10% on an annual basis. In the Waitaki, it's actually as we've come out of border dike to spray, it's been a lot higher. But it's 10%. Well, I guess we're getting challenged at the moment from the board too. Clonarma's challenging us around whether we need to be at 10%. And I think as our irrigation has improved or it continues to improve, that I guess that challenge or that question is one we need to consider. That whether, you know, like it's just we've done 10% because we've done 10%. But I think we probably need to be more targeted around. There'll be farms that still need 10%. There's farms that probably need more. But there's others where the irrigation's really good. The regrassing's all up to date that perhaps we should pull back on. So.
Right. Well, thank you. A token of appreciation from CITIC, Blair. And if you can also show your appreciation. Thank you.
Thank you.